best treated by neonicotinoids. We don't currently have that. So that's another reason why we have the limited exception in the ordinance to, in specific cases where it's an emergency, to allow the use continued.
But we have a pesticide for that elm borer that's not a...
I believe I'm correct in saying that.
I think your dad's okay.
Okay, thank you.
But you know what we could also do is get the experts back up at the end.
Appreciate,
we have other
technical knowing
questions.
That factoid.
Thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Actually, Mayor,
I
have one more question, yes, which is about the varroa mite.
Sir.
Is the varroa mite sort of a recent evolutionary creation, or has it existed for thousands of years alongside of bees?
They have existed. It came over actually from China. And like most pests are tend to be migratory. They come over in a box. That's why we're very careful about importation. And so the varroa mite's been around. I think there's been more sufficient tracking of bee populations since back when we were throwing stones at the moon, trying to see if gravity worked.
So you're saying that varroa mites were more recently introduced to the United States, and our bees haven't learned to coexist with them like Chinese bees have, or something?
I don't think it's a coexistent model, Commissioner. I think that they are a parasite that will affix themselves to pollinators and to bees in particular.
Right. I think that I've read in terms of bat population collapses that there's a fungus that does not affect Asian bats but does affect American bats because they bats in over centuries in Asia evolved to resist them. And I was wondering if there's an argument that there's something similar with varroa mites.
That's quite an excellent question. And I would actually leave that to a beekeeper and instead of association exec to answer.
Thank you. You both.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lori Vollmer. I own and operate a Northeast Portland plant nursery and garden store called Garden Fever, and I've been in business for 12 years, and I'm also a member of the Oregon Association of Nurseries. My hope is the information I present will assist the council in a decision to prohibit the use of neonicotinoid plant care products on city property and to only use plant material that has not been treated with neonics at any stage of growth. I feel there is clear scientific evidence that neonicotinoids have a detrimental, if not lethal, effect on pollinators. I'd like to address the concerns regarding the sourcing of neonic-free plant material. At Garden Fever, we began working towards eliminating products containing neonicotinoids in the spring of 2013 by removing all plant care items that contain them from our retail shelves. We also polled our growers and were surprised to learn that 10 of them were not using neonicotinoids, and a number of others were working towards eliminating them, many focusing on biocontrol alternatives. At the beginning of 2015, the number of growers at our nursery has increased to 19. Two additional ones, Monrovia Nursery and Isley Nursery, use neonicotinoids only on one genus of tree, spruce. The majority of our growers are now growing with methods other than the use of neonicotinoids. They're all Oregon and Washington growers, and a chart of the kinds of plants we purchase from them is attached to my statement. My hope is that this information will demonstrate the trend toward growing neonic-free plants and eliminate concerns about sourcing plant material for Portland City property. It can be done. I was also told that the council is also concerned about controlling a pest called rose midge. After all, we are the city of roses. We don't have issues with that at our nursery, so I've asked another local nursery owner, Ed Blatter of Cornell Farms. They have a much larger selling yard and sell a full complement of roses. Ed's response is that they, and I quote, haven't experienced this problem, but this may be because we start with bare root plants every year in fresh soil. We haven't even found it necessary to spray for aphids or disease for quite a few years, but we do feed a lot and water a lot and choose disease-resistant varieties and release beneficial insects. Sounds like a fall raking away with replacing mulch might work well, as well as beneficial insects, which are not only cheaper, but the ultimate systemic control, end quote. Ed is also a beekeeper at their nursery. On the OSU Pacific Northwest Nursery IPM website, this same cultural control is mentioned. Removing the mulch at the end of the growing season in the late fall and replacing with fresh mulch may remove the overwintering stage of the midge, which generally is quite shallow in the top 1 to 2 inches of soil. With any biological control, the goal is not to rid the garden of all pests, but better control the ones that are not to our liking. In order for biological controls to work in the Portland Rose Garden, We would need to be willing to let some pests remain to feed the beneficials so they can survive and in turn keep the unwanted bugs at check. There will be a few roses in the garden that may not be perfect specimens. However, they will be beautiful and enjoyed for years to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
The next three are Taggart Siegel, Christine Winson, and Rich Hatfield. And they'll be followed by Larry Treleaven, Brian Lacey, and Jen Dawes.
I've learned a lot about this topic in the past several months. And with respect to the last three testifiers, we only have Rose Midge in two of our rose gardens, in the International Test Gardens and in the Peninsula Park. And they think it was because that it was brought into those places. Apparently, this midge can't fly very far, so we don't have it elsewhere. So it's fascinating, and thank you each for contributing your expertise.
Welcome.
Great. Thank you, Mayor Hales, and members of the City Council. The last time I was in this room was in 2011, when we were proud to create September 17th as Honey Bee Awareness Day.
Oh, and just put your name into the record, sorry.
Taggart Siegel. Yes. I am the creator of Queen of the Sun, What Are the Bees Telling Us? The film looks at the catastrophic disappearance of honeybees around the world and the mysterious world of the beehive. I have interviewed experts, scientists, entomologists, and beekeepers, and there is conclusive evidence that the pesticides that are extremely harmful for pollinators and ultimately to ourselves. And I could say this has also affected me personally. I'm a beekeeper, and I live in Selwood, and my bees just died. They disappeared. They were healthy 3 weeks ago, and they're now gone. And this was a classic case of colony collapse disorder where the bees disappear, and the honey is there. I had two boxes of honey just full of beautiful honey, and the bees disappeared. So this, because bees could fly up to 3 miles, I don't know if it was my neighbor next door or two, you know, a block away or up to 3 miles away. Whatever they were bringing back to our hive at some point was affecting them. And in fact, they might not have made it back to the hive. Man has created a deadly cocktail for bees. And if we don't protect them, we're not protecting ourselves. Colony collapse disorder has reached life-threatening dimensions. 30 to 40% of beehives disappear every year. And when you look at entomologist Mae Barenbaum, she says these neonicotinoids, which are neurotoxic, they target the nervous system, affect the ability of the bees to learn and to remember and to navigate, all of which would contribute to an inability to return to the hive after foraging. I think that's possibly what happened to my bees. And the head of the UN Environmental Program warns that the decline of bees means the writing is on the wall. We have to do something to ensure pollination for future generations. They're absolutely essential in what they give us. They're putting the future... these pesticides are putting the future of creation at stake, not just for the future of bees, but the future of humanity and the future of life. We have an opportunity to set an example for the rest of the nation and the world here in Portland. In a city like Portland that prides itself on environmental stewardship, we can set an example to help save pollinators. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you, dear City Council members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this very important topic. My name is Christine Winson. I work for Univar in the Environmental Sciences Division. I've been a state-licensed pesticide consultant for 13 years. I came in with a certain premise, and Commissioner Fritz, if you would clarify for me, because I wasn't quite sure the way this ordinance was written. You said that this ban does not include city buildings.
It includes city-owned property, but the city of Portland doesn't own housing buildings, for example.
Okay. Does the city own buildings?
We own this building and others.
Building and others.
Yeah.
So does the ban include those properties?
Yes.
Okay. So this is not just strictly an outdoor only?
Correct.
Okay. Right. So yeah. As Gene Camp had said before, we do have issues in buildings with bed bugs, with other pests. And as Section 1, Subset 1 indicates, the EPA has noted that neonicotinoids are reduced risk pesticides for public health pests. So here it states it right there. So within the interior of buildings, we have bed bugs, we have fleas, there are stinging insects. Taking this tool away where we have reduced risk to mammals, to people, to children, to pets, will be giving us the alternative of using other pesticides that are more toxic, again, to mammals, and in applications that will never harm a pollinator. So I would urge this commission to look at perhaps rewriting and opening up the opportunity to consider an indoor exemption for neonicotinoids. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. City Commissioners and Mayor Hales and citizens of Portland, good afternoon and thanks for the opportunity to speak. My name is Rich Hatfield. I'm a resident of Southwest Portland. I'm a father of two young children, and I'm also a conservation biologist with the Saracy Society for Invertebrate Conservation. Neonicotinoids are the most widely used group of insecticides in the world. They've been billed as low-risk, high-efficacy chemicals with low toxicity to non-target organisms. However, evidence is quickly mounting in the form of hundreds of peer-reviewed scientific articles that these chemicals are not low risk, that the efficacy is quite limited in agricultural settings, and that because of their systemic nature, their longevity, they're having profound effects on beneficial insect communities and the animals and processes that depend on them. In short, these chemicals are contributing to the destruction of functioning ecosystems. While the bulk of attention has been paid to bees, less well understood is the effect that these chemicals are having on our less charismatic, yet equally important invertebrates, earthworms, ground beetles, and predatory insects, which all contribute profoundly to a healthy ecosystem. The fact of the matter is that less toxic, more targeted, and equally, if not more effective, alternatives like water and soap exist. In addition to reading much of the scientific literature surrounding this issue, I've also seen devastating effects that these chemicals can have firsthand. I was the biologist that responded to the bumblebee kill in Wilsonville in 2013. When I was on the scene in June, dead bumblebees were literally raining out of the trees, their bodies hitting the pavement. The thought that these beautiful animals were dying for cosmetic reasons to prevent cars from getting a sticky residue was maddening. Clean cars are optional. Bees are not optional. As someone that has worked on a bumblebee conservation for the bulk of my adult life, this was a disturbing and revolting experience. I'm also a member of the IUCN, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature Bumblebee Specialist Group. I've just finished an analysis of the 46 North American bumblebee species, and our results suggest that more than a quarter of them are facing some degree of extinction risk. One of the ODA's conclusion from the bumblebee Wilsonville kill was that our bumblebee populations were healthy because there were so many in that parking lot. There should have been as many as 15 or 16 species of bumblebees on the ground that day, but there was really only one species. The Willamette Valley is home to over 400 species of native bees, and there was really just one species in that parking lot. To me, that does not suggest that we have a healthy community of bumblebees. It suggests that the biodiversity in the Willamette Valley is reduced, and I suspect that neonicotinoids are culpable, at least partially, in that decline. Just one more comment here, sorry. When it comes to open city and spaces, including our rose gardens, beauty is not enough anymore, or at least we need to change the definition of beauty. Accepting blemishes, brown spots, imperfect blooms needs to become part of our ethos. We need more from our landscapes than aesthetics. We need them to feed our wildlife, sequester carbon, and function as working ecosystems, despite what industry would like us to believe, neonicotinoid chemicals are not part of this equation. I also Our children learn in our parks, and we don't know what the long-term effects of these chemicals are on developing minds and bodies, and I don't want my children or our city's children to be part of the experiment. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you all.
The next three are Larry Treleaven, Brian Lacey, and Jen Dawes, and they'll be followed by Molly Fitzpatrick, Carrie Weisenbeck-Foles, and Bob Bernstein.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Hello. Well, my name is Jen Davis. Thank you very much for putting this ordinance forward. I am the founder of Bee Friendly Portland, a coalition of beekeepers, farmers, educators, and environmentalists that work at a neighborhood level to protect our bees. I'm also a beekeeper. I raise native bees and teach classes for the Portland Fruit Tree Project and other venues. I can go to most any nursery today in Portland and buy some flowers to plant in my yard for bee forage. Sadly, I'll have no idea if these plants have been pretreated with neonicotinoid pesticides. This class of neonicotine pesticides are water-soluble and therefore systemic, taken up by plants and expressed in all cells, including nectar and pollen. Over 800 peer-reviewed studies have found these systemic pesticides can affect bees' foraging abilities, learning abilities, immunities, including to the varroa mite, and reproduction cycles. In addition, these systemic pesticides can remain in plants for long periods. Studies have found in some woody plants persistence as long as 10 years or more. So my flowers I plant for my bees may actually harm them. We need to change our ideas of what healthy parks and gardens look like. Not all pest damage is bad. If aphids predate a tree in a healthy ecosystem, ladybugs and green lacewings will gladly feast on them. Ladybugs, as well as our bees and butterflies, are disappearing at an alarming rate. We don't need Roundup, which the World Health Organization has just determined probably causes cancer, saturating our playground fields. We don't need trees and flowers exuding pesticides in every cell. Our children should not have to play in these toxic arenas, and we should not be poisoning our public and private gardens when we have the knowledge and the tools to successfully grow healthy and beautiful gardens without these toxins. California's severe drought should alert us now to protect our bees. As California landscapes dry up and die, so do their bees. We could soon see a massive food and bee crisis in this nation. We will need healthy soils and healthy bees for local agriculture. So please act now to protect our bees. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Mayor,
oops.
Sorry.
Nothing you did.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, I'm Larry Treleaven, and for the last 89 years, our family has owned Sprague Pest Solutions, and we operate in several states here in the West. And I have been with the company 44 years full-time after graduating from the University of Washington. And so I think my testimony is already submitted. I just gave it to your administrative assistant here. But I'm going to answer some of the questions that you asked of previous testimonies. First of all, what are some of the alternatives for treating for bed bugs, I think, was one of your questions. And so the one of those alternatives, a couple of them, one of them is fumigants, gas. But they're toxic to humans, and we have to keep people away from there. They're more costly, and the health risks we have to consider very carefully prior to using that, number one. Number two is heat, where there's no pesticides used. And here in Portland, as well as like in our Seattle office, we have three crews that use heat treatments all day long. That's all they do, just to combat the influx of that bed bug population in multiplex units, apartment complexes, condos, and in hotels. And the same situation is here. All right. Other things that I wanted to discuss with you is that last week, I'm not a hired gun. I work for our family operation, but I do testify in Congress a lot. And I met last week with Jack Arriaga, who is a legislative aide to Susan Bonamici in D.C. Also met with Thomas Griffin, who works for Greg Walden, and also Zach Stokes. And he is with Kurt Schrader, and we're working on a national level to try to address this very issue right now. Okay, and we're making headway on the. President Obama sent an executive order on protecting pollinator health and has asked each of the states to come up with their own pollinator health protection program. And that letter was just issued not long ago. Okay. And next of all, we also are using trained canines to look for different various insects, including bed bugs, so we can pinpoint areas of infestation and treat them with heat and other things that minimize the use of pesticides. But I'm open to any questions from any of you on the panel, because I didn't get
That's helpful. Thank you. So, in fact, the federal government is saying states and localities go innovate on your own?
No, they're saying states go on your own.
States, not
municipalities.
Okay.
And that was the directive from President Obama. And so EPA is working on that in conjunction with others as well. And there's been a couple of House bills that have died en route. But the issue is coming up on a regular basis back there. I was just there last week.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Thanks very much.
Any questions?
Welcome.
Brian Lacey. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for this discussing this issue. What I'm about to read, I'm guilty of not addressing it just as a city property issue, but as a broader one, so maybe my comments will be more appropriate for a future date. Also, I'm a long-term beekeeper, so if you have any technical questions about varroa mites, I'm happy to address them. As the owner of Live Honeybees, a Portland-based pollinator education company, thanks for hearing my views on pollinators, the canary in the coal mine of food security. They're suffering, and they need your help. As a resident of Portland since 76, I appreciate the nearly four decades of leadership Portland, Oregon has shown regarding health and sustainability. Traditionally, we're the city of roses, so befriending pollinators would seem like a natural step. Portland also stands out nationally for supporting farmers' markets, community-supported agriculture, backyard chickens, even backyard beehives. Our local pride was tested by the massive bee deaths in Wilsonville and Hillsborough. One of the silver linings was Congressman Blumenauer's Save America's Pollinator Act. We need that concern and leadership not to fade, because out of the limelight, the biggest threat marches on, death by thousands of cuts every season by neonics, toxin banned in the European Union, as was mentioned in 2013, banned also by Vancouver, BC garden retailers, who today refuse to purchase neonicotinoid-laced plants from their wholesalers. Looking into the future challenges to health and sustainability, such as population pressure and density, climate change, declines in available gardenable soil, and continued lobbying by chemical companies, I urge you to join the EU, Vancouver, BC, and the National Wildlife Federation to continue leadership to ban the neonics. Ban them in bottles, plants, seeds, laced, and coated with neonics. Ban the sales from local retailer shelves. If there's a way and a will to do so, ban online purchases being shipped to Portland. As a public campaign, I see a public campaign and incentives for citizens to bring these toxins to Metro's recycling station. Leadership and caliber of this caliber would improve Portland's food security, reduce our toxin load, remove one significant cause of insect declines, both of pollinators and the invertebrate fish that feed on them, as they are both very stable and water-soluble. The work Live Honeybees does, removing swarms and hives from trees and buildings throughout the city of Portland, working often with the city of Portland, teaching the difference between honeybees and other insects, universally people feel a relief and a sense of community with pollinators, replacing those fears. In the end, we are a community not of just of people, but of a broader, more inclusive community that relies on millions of small pollinators and other insects. Please support and defend them. So thank you for your service, and to show you in the sweetest terms possible, here's the gift of honey from some of our hives, one for each of the four quadrants of Portland. And because we don't want to publicly bribe you, and because honey is a community effort being derived from the flowers all over Portland, we would gladly donate on your behalf these jars of four local nonprofits of your choosing.
Great. That's very nice. Thank you. I'm sure Blanche House would love to put some on their biscuits.
You tell me who to send them to, and I'd be glad to get them there.
Okay, is this Blanche? Mine is Right to Dream 2, please.
Say that again, Martin.
Right to Dream 2. It's at 4th and Burnside.
Excellent.
We'll get you addresses.
Okay.
have a nomination.
We'll let Steven, Dan, give you a nomination.
And this is
a
zucchini pollinated and not pollinated. Kind of graphic. These are what children experience with honeybees if you give them a chance.
Thank you very much.
You're very
welcome. Appreciate
it.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Do you have any questions about bees at all? Neonics, colony collapse disorder, varroa mites?
Actually, yeah. About varroa mites, I mean, what's your perspective? I mean, on the one hand, you might think that varroa mites have probably been around forever, so how could they suddenly be causing colony collapse?
Well, they have. It's a geographic thing. It's sort of like zebra mussels and other things. When human beings move too quickly and carry, unknowns to them, something that is not native to another part of the world that, and where there is no habituation to it, then, yes, there will be problems. So when in the mid-70s, varroa mites were on hives that originally came from Russia, were transported back to Russia via train, fast enough for the neonics for the varroa mite to still inhabit those hives, and they spread to Europe and hence to everywhere except Australia. Asian bees are, they have handled the varroa mite for a long time, and Russian bees are one of the best bees to bring into that when we integrate them into the genetic pool here in the United States. That'll help. There's something called varroa sensitive hygiene, wherein if the queen and the drone that the queen mates with both have this ability, the workers that queen will lay will be able to sense mites in the cells and open up those cells and destroy the mites. So you only need about 10% of your total bee population to do that. So using breeding, using organic and biodynamic methods to solve these problems of bed bugs versus bees, I think is the way to go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much.
The next three are Molly Fitzpatrick, Carrie Weisenbach-Foles, and Bob Bernstein. And they'll be followed by Kathleen Clark, McKenna McClure, and Madeline Morris.
I think this council hearing is a first. I think it's the first time that we've had a grapefruit or a jar of honey in the chamber. So we're setting some kind of new standard here. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Molly Fitzpatrick. I am a Northeast Portland resident, acupuncturist, as well as a beekeeper, bee advocate, and a swarm catcher since 2009. I want to speak to the events of summer of 2013, where I witnessed multiple bee deaths, as well as behavior that's indicative of bee poisoning. In my own backyard, I would notice my bees would return to the yard and not be able to make it to their hive because they were demonstrating erratic movements, indicative of neurotoxicity. I've also witnessed dysfunctional behavior in catching a swarm in Northeast Portland on the neighborhood of 35th and Shaver. I was called to a swarm in the 90-degree heat of that summer. That was also during the time of the Wilsonville bee kill. The birch tree that the bees landed in were, I would presume to be, was sprayed with bees given the nature of the manicured lawn. The person who I was in contact with asked me not to speak to the owner of the property because he was supporting an ailing wife and was elderly himself, so I did not follow up with his use of chemicals in his lawn, but his lawn demonstrated an indication of chemical management. And the bees that had landed in this birch tree were not able to cling to another. So a swarm is how bees reproduce. It's the birth of a new hive. And instead of being in a cohesive structure where at the center the queen is being protected by her workers, these bees were falling in clumps, baseball-sized clumps. I noticed at first when they were hitting me on the back, and I was wondering why I was being hit with bees falling from the tree. And I climbed up into the tree myself, and I investigated this swarm, and they weren't able to cling to one another, indicating to me there was some neurotoxic potential of poisoning. And it was very distressing to me. It was during a time when I was enrolled at a doctoral program at the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine. And for that requirement, I took a PSU class on Gandhi's philosophy of nonviolence and education and sustainability. And this was an extracurricular class for a doctoral of acupuncture and oriental medicine. And what I learned in this class was a number of things, but ultimately that the search for truth comes through acts of compassion. And I had to reflect back to myself, how could I be most compassionate? And pursuing bee advocacy at that time was fundamental in my learning process. So for this course at PSU, I did additional hours of community-based learning in which I brought to the Wilsonville Bee Memorial prayer flags. So I brought blank pieces of fabric, and I'm going to read to you these, and Brian and Jen are going to help me as I read. So the first one says, I love bees. Hold on, I'm going to just read them as we go. Stay strong. And these are voices from citizens that may or may not be in this room. I recognize a few people, but not everyone's here. So be strong. I love you, bees. German language, I don't understand. Spanish, muestra tu amor a las abejas, ayúdales, salvates. It says, show us your love for the bees, save us, help us. Happiness equals bees. Happy trees means happy bees. Let's hear it for the bees. Om symbol. Let's choose to be GMO free. Let's see. Be here now. Don't worry. Be happy. Be strong. What does it say? Why on bees buzz? Small child handwriting. Save the our bees.
I might need you get you to stop before you go all the way through.
Okay. Well, there are 41 other people here that posted this, but it was an opportunity for folks to express their grief, sadness, as well as hope and solidarity. And I am appreciative of City Council to take the steps. I do have concerns about some of the aspects of the ordinances, which other people have spoke about, but I just want to close with that. This is an opportunity we all have to really look within our hearts and find out what is really best for all of life and look at this from a holistic perspective. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
I'm Carrie Weisenbach-Foles. Dear Mayor and City Council, we, the undersigned residents living at 6325 North Albina Avenue across the street from Peninsula Park, strongly support the proposed ordinance prohibiting the use and purchase of neonicotinoid pesticides by the City of Portland. We strongly support prohibiting the use of these pesticides in our parks and natural areas. We are a community of adults and children that regularly use Peninsula Park year-round. We grow food in our front yard and our fruit trees, and our property is certified under Audubon Society of Portland's Backyard Habitat Certification Program. We strongly support city policies that promote human health and safeguard pollinators, native birds, and other wildlife in our community. Therefore, we strongly support your action to prohibit the use of neonicotinoid pesticides and neonicotinoid-like pesticides in our parks, natural areas, and other city-owned property. We understand that the proposed ordinance includes an exemption for the Rose Garden at Peninsula Park, where the rose midge is a problem. We also understand that the proposed prohibition would therefore not occur immediately in our local park, but we urge city staff to aggressively pursue alternatives to the use of the neonicotinoid pesticides so that the prohibition can be extended to the Peninsula Park Rose Garden as soon as possible. We enjoy the roses at Peninsula Park Rose Garden, but we value human and ecological health more than the particular aesthetic they provide.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And most likely the pilot project will be at Peninsula Park, so
great.
I'd love to engage you and your neighbors in that, that volunteering for that effort and monitoring it and just in the whole process. Thank you so much for coming
we'll
in.
Support that. Thank you.
Welcome.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners, and Amanda Fritz. I thank you for this proposal. In the best of all...
Name in the record, sorry.
Just oh, I'm Bob Bernstein. In the best of all possible worlds, we could count on the EPA or the Food and Drug Administration to take care of these sorts of matters. There's a well-documented revolving door between Monsanto and chemical companies and our regulatory system. Money talks. Take a look at what's happened in Southern Oregon with silviculture and aerial spraying. It's the same sort of thing. I'm not surprised that people come up here who are being paid for their time, unlike me, and want to keep the status quo. They want to make a buck, okay? I do believe that human beings are adaptable enough that they will find a way to make a buck. If you create a market for plants that haven't been treated, that market will get filled by enterprising people. So, you know, like, I don't buy that argument at all. In terms of trying to find a smoking gun, it would be nice if we were still living in a 1950s sort of John Wayne world. We are not. We used to think that cancer was one disease. It is thousands of diseases. When you look at how you break that chain, there are thousands of different ways of interfering with that replication. When you get into looking for a smoking gun and the kind of coarse testing that is being done on chemicals that are brought into our environment, it's ridiculous. If it, you know, there are papers that I've read that say what may be happening is that we're interfering with a cytochrome inside of the bee that then makes the bee less able to get rid of other toxins. So then, like, how do you deal with this with a very industry-friendly regulatory process that says you have to find one single smoking gun? The world doesn't work that way. It's fallacious. And so I would say that you should do what you can, you know, to ban these substances. I would tighten things up. The devil's in the details. It seems to me there's a lot of wiggle room there to continue using these substances. And I also went to an interesting talk by a woman, Susan Kegley. She's a doctorate, I believe. And this was through the Chemistry Society of Portland. And she works out of the Pesticide Research Institute. And you might want to contact her, and I can send you some information about her. And so I would just tighten things up with the exceptions. I would move ahead. If you want to use neonics on bed bugs, you know, I'm half ticked off that they used up time on this. But, you know, what people do to other people, at least we get to vote. What we do to critters, you know, the micro and macro invertebrates that are in the water table, that the fish rely on for food. I did amphibian research surveys last year. Our amphibians are in terrible shape. You know, the world's basically falling apart. If you want to continue using neonics, it's on you. I don't think you should.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all.
The next three are Kathleen Cook, or Clark, rather, McKenna McClure, and Madeline Morris. And they'll be followed by Patricia Green, Peter Tenneau, and John Nicol.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Kathleen Clark, and I'm a private resident, like a clinical social worker, and a gardener. I am urging the holistic view of, like, questioning, as been asked before, questioning what is our definition of aesthetics, like with the rose midge, and that I'm also a permaculture student, and that refers to the holistic design of nature, and that multi factors come into play. I don't believe that we can test the smoking gun that Bob Bernstein, that we can isolate in that way. And as the owner of Garden Fever said, multifaceted organic care of their plants produce results, the alternative results. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is McKenna McClure, and I appreciate taking the time to hold a hearing on this very important issue. I'm giving me an opportunity to speak. I'm a ninth grader from Southeast Portland, and in my arts lab class this year, I created an environmental magazine on this subject and chose this topic for one of the articles because I also think it is very important. I'm just going to briefly list three reasons why I think you should ban the use of neonicotinoid insecticides in Portland. First, the bees provide critical ecosystem services. These services are worth a lot of money and are a significant part of the regional economy. The metropolitan area of northern Willamette Valley, between Salem and Portland, produces one-fifth of the state's gross farm revenue. According to the 2012 census of agriculture from Multnomah County, there were 598 farms on nearly 30,000 acres. They sold nearly $45 million worth of nursery, greenhouse, floriculture, and sod products, and $19.4 million worth of vegetables, melons, fruits, nuts, and berries. A lot of these are flowering crops that depend on pollinators. And harm to the pollinators will harm the local agriculture and economy. Second, there are more scientific studies that link neonicotinoid use to serious harm in bees. This has raised fears that the pesticides are an important factor in the plummeting populations and of bees and culinary collapse disorder, along with diseases and widespread loss of habitat. A new study from Harvard says that neonicotinoids are likely a primary cause of culinary collapse disorder. According to the lead researcher, it apparently doesn't take much of the pesticide to affect the bees. Our experiment included pesticide amounts below what is normally present in the environment. Although more research is being done, the risk is serious enough that the European Union already put a two-year moratorium on the use of these insecticides on flowering crops. As a progressive city that gets an increasing amount of our produce from local farms, I think we also need to protect our local pollinators and food security and take a precautionary approach by not using these insect neurotoxins until better information on their impact is available. Third, I'm worried about how these pesticides accumulate and pose a threat to ecosystems and human health. Neonicotinoid pesticides are systemic, meaning they're in the plant and can't be washed off. They also persist and accumulate in the soil for more than 10 years. Neonicotinoids have ecosystem impact because they can contaminate surface waters and then kill aquatic insects that provide essential food for birds, fish, such as endangered salmon in Johnson Creek and the Willamette River. A 2012 Japanese study also showed that neonicotinoids affect brain development in mammals. The research warned that detailed investigation of the neonicotinoids is needed to protect the health of human children. As a human child, I urge you to ban these toxins from my city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
What school do you go to?
Milwaukee Academy of the Arts.
You're a credit, and I don't think I could have written like that when I was in ninth grade. Good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Madeline Morris. I'm a beekeeper. I'm a gardener. I'm also a small business owner. My business is called Mickleberry Gardens. We create honey-based herbal remedies that we sell at a variety of local retailers. Many of my passions, as well as my livelihood, really depend on pollinator health. We keep about 25 to 30 honeybee colonies around the Portland area, and then we also work with larger scale beekeepers all around the region who equally depend on having healthy pollinators. So I started beekeeping about 8 years ago out of my concern for bees dying, and since then it seems really clear that the scientific community overwhelmingly agrees that the neonicotinoid class of pesticides is a major contributing factor to the declining health of pollinator species. And that's also been something that I've been able to observe in our own experiences keeping bees. This use of pesticides really has a reverberating effect up through the food chain and impacts birds, amphibians, reptiles, plant communities, and human beings, as a lot of other people have mentioned today. And the thing about this particular systemic class of pesticides is that they can remain in plant tissue for many years, and that this essentially provides poison pollen and nectar to sensitive bees. And, I think I heard the argument earlier that there's no scientific evidence that these pesticides are toxic to bees, but it is clear that it's toxic in large amounts. We've had descriptions of bees falling like rain out of trees from, when too many of the neonicotinoid is used or too much of it. So it's reasonable to assume that, it would have toxic impacts even in lower doses, especially, when it becomes clear how far-reaching and ubiquitous these classes of pesticides are used. They're in a lot of nursery plants, they're in a lot of seeds, like they're really all over the place. So I think it's important to recognize the pollinator species have a wide range of assaults on their health and well-being, from loss of habitat, inadequate access to nutritious forage, pests and diseases, and exposure to a wide range of toxic pesticides. So, you know, this is not the only thing that's going to solve the problem, but it's going to be a major step in the right direction. And the health, vitality, and prosperity of our region is really interconnected with the health of pollinator species. So please approve this ordinance. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Thank you all.
Next three are Patricia Green, Peter Tenneau, and John Nickel. And they'll be followed by Barbara Quinn, Don Francis, and Serena Jepson.
I think Don left.
Okay, let's go ahead and go with Barbara Quinn.
Okay, welcome. Please, thank you.
I'm John Nickel. I live in North Portland. I'll keep this brief because much has been said that I would be saying about this. I'm very much in favor of this ordinance, but I do not feel that it goes far enough. We're facing a real crisis here. I consider the cities to be a refuge for our pollinators. The commercial countryside is so bombarded by chemicals that really the cities with intelligent small or family organic gardeners and people taking care of birds are really the what's going to save these pollinators. We may be looking at pollinators going from the cities to the countryside. Given the monoculture and the vast acres that are being sprayed with pesticides. And Oregon is just beginning to examine its archaic pesticide laws regarding forestry in this legislative session. So the onus is on you to really protect what we have. That being said, I don't think that this ordinance goes anywhere near far enough. And like the tobacco ban, I can see it very rapidly gathering much more speed and addressing commercial application. And I think that that should begin with data collecting and what has already been sprayed, where have these already been, the records of the commercial pesticide people have to have what they used and where, and that should be examined so that we really see what the magnitude of our urban situation is. I'll let somebody else speak.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks. Welcome.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing this up as an ordinance and for Amanda Fritz, what you've done on this. I'm going to speak. We've had excellent testimony.
Just put
here.
Your name in the record.
Please. Oh, Peter Tenneau.
Thanks, Peter.
And I live in North Portland. And I'll speak more from the heart, I suppose, or philosophical point, because some excellent testimony has been given here today, and I've been educated. But I also read. I'm not uninformed, and I also have practical experience as a natural gardener in Portland on a large lot. And I have a little story with regard to that, and it pertains to what some other people have said about beauty should not trump nature. Beauty, nature is beauty if it remains intact. I have a rhodie about 15 feet high among many wonderful rhodies on my property, and this one is my prize plant of all trees and plants in that garden. It's my prize. It came up with a problem, lace bug infestation, and the city is probably experienced with this. I, in investigating, found that imidacloprid, which is a neonic, I did some research on this. I was to make a decision. Well, I was committed to being a natural gardener, so I wasn't going to use it anyway. But that was what was suggested. I could have applied this, and it could save this roadie. The roadie is now very, very sick. I will lose that roadie, but I still maintain the value as a natural gardener. We're fooling around with nature too much. Nature takes care of itself. Our fixes, these chemical fixes, just continue on and on and on. And nature has a way of getting around them. They adapt to them. So heavier doses of chemicals have to be used. Back to the point. The city is only concerned with its own property with this, but it can be an example. It could be an example for all people. I would particularly say that the labeling is an important issue. People want to know what they're buying. But thank you very much, and I support this wholeheartedly. In fact, maybe would go beyond.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks very much. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Quinn. Thank you very much for this forum today. I'm representing the Friends of Baltimore Woods, also of North Portland, today. And the Friends support this ban on the use of neonicotinoids on city properties. About one-third of Baltimore Woods corridor is meadow, prairie. It's going to be conserved as prairie and open grassland specifically for the purpose of housing the Greenway Trail and providing an environmental education to local students as well as adults who use the trail. And this is part of this prairie property cost about $3 million. The city has a big part of that investment in this property, and we really like to see that investment used well. We want to bring, in fact, we have a permit with Parks right now to bring children down to the meadow to do a butterfly monitoring project. We would really like them to find some butterflies. And so we appreciate this partnering with the city on these projects, but we really need you to take leadership on stewarding, being a steward for both grassland, which is a very quickly disappearing important pollinator habitat, and also partnering with us on working on getting pollinators back. We want to help have the kids in our neighborhood monitoring for monarchs and other types of pollinators. We think it would be really exciting for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thank you all.
Okay. If Don Francis left, then the last three I show are Serena Jepson, Charles Johnson, and Nancy Newell.
Okay, come on up, please. Looks like we might have two out of three.
And this is a Patricia Green also.
Okay. Welcome.
Thanks. Can I start? So my name is Serena Jepson, and I work for the Xerces Society. I direct the Endangered Species Program there, and I'm an entomologist by training. And I strongly support this ordinance. I've been asked to read a letter that Claire Clock, a blueberry farmer from Corbett, sent in for this. So I'll read that, and then I just have a brief comment as well. Mayor Hale and City Council members, I am Claire Clock from East Multnomah County. My wife and I have a farm in the Corbett area. I have certification as a certified private pesticide applicator and pesticide consultant from the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I practiced a strict form of integrated pest management. I have and continue to use restricted pesticides on my farm as needed. I am here to urge a ban on the neonicotinoid pesticides by the City of Portland and will continue my effort at the state legislative level. I use native pollinators, including bumblebees, mason bees, solitary ground bees, and parasitic wasps to pollinate my blueberry field for at least the last 10 years. Diversity in pollinator and other species will increase resiliency in this era of climate change. While neonicotinoids have been an effective chemical for insecticide control, we are now seeing that collateral damage is too high. Other chemicals that have been effective and are now gone, at least in the United States, include DDT, lead arsenate, 2,4,5-T, and methylbromide. It is important to take the lead on this important issue. Again, I urge you to ban the use of neonicotinoids in the City of Portland. Thank you for your time. And then also, I just wanted to address a couple points that I heard during the great testimonies today, the representatives from Oregon Nursery Association and Oregonians for Food and Shelter called into question this idea that neonicotinoids are the sole contributor to colony collapse disorder in honeybees. And I want to point out I'm really familiar with the wide body of scientific research and literature on this topic, and it is true that colony collapse disorder is likely caused by multiple factors, not just neonicotinoid use, but there is a vast body of research out there right now that demonstrates unambiguous lethal and sublethal effects of neonicotinoids on both honeybees, which are not native, managed both commercially and by folks like your father, as well as our native bees, like our nearly 50 species of native bumblebees, as well as a wide variety of other organisms. So as Lorianne from Center for Biological Diversity pointed out, there are new studies coming out almost every day. One very recently just came out of the University of Minnesota, looking at the effect of neonicotinoids on ladybugs, painted lady butterfly, and monarch butterfly caterpillars, and found these compounds to be highly toxic to all of those organisms. And this is, I think, the tip of the iceberg. I mean, a lot of the research in that area has not been well developed. This is new research, but I just want to read one quote from her paper. And she said, quote, "The use of the neonicotinoid imidacloprid at greenhouse/nursery rates reduced survival of beneficial insects feeding on pollen and nectar and is incompatible with the principles of IPM." So I just urge you to approve this ordinance and be a leader in IPM with the City of Portland.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Charles, I think you might get the last word here.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Charles Johnson, and I'm representing Oregonians for Food and Shelter and Wisdom and Compassion. We almost always disagree with Oregonians for Food and Shelter. On that note, we'll talk about the reference to the situation in Europe, where there's been many bans on neonicotinoid products. And, of course, we know Europe is doing it wrong. They're giving their children health care with the children not having to have bake sales. And they're not spending a huge, disgusting amount of their budget on frivolous defense projects. So they're probably also wrong about neonicotinoids. Obviously, this small baby step should be taken. The city parks and the little landscaping that's done around city business. And if the mayor takes long naps and has bed bugs in the office, he should not...
Neither.
he should be spared. He should have the option maybe of suing the city to use neonicotinoids to restore his cot. But...
I have no cot. Let the record show.
But
you're
generally...
You're going downhill fast here, Charles.
We should accept... that there is no research of any kind that has found one definitive cause to colony collapse disorder. And since pollination is slightly important to maintaining the circle of life, we should feel good about moving forward with this ban on city-owned property use of neonicotinoids. The problem, as I think it was Mr. Nichols pointed out with this ordinance, is it could use some broader, stronger language about how we're going to invest a specific number of man hours into working with Metro government and with Multnomah County and the state to bring this wise policy to a broader use in Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else want to speak? So I haven't heard any proposals for amendments, Commissioner, so this will come back for second reading, but it might be an opportunity for council members to comment now while we have folks here that are interested in the issue. So you'd like to do that.
I would. I want to thank everybody. This has been a really very interesting hearing and a wide range of perspectives, giving me even more information that I didn't know about this issue despite having studied it. So thank you all for being here, and thank you, Mayor, for entertaining this hearing and for that being here. Potentially, if we have agreements on the council next week, I might ask to add an emergency clause so that we can get started earlier. Can we do that at the second reading? Mm-hmm. Yes, city attorney says we can, so that's good. There's only three of us here right now, so we can't do that right now. But certainly thanks to Tom Bazell and my staff and to our partners at Beyond Toxics, Xoxi Society, Center for Biological Diversity, Audubon, and multiple other groups. John Reed of the Portland Parks and Recreation gave us information about our integrated pest management, and he, Mike Abate, and our team will be implementing the pilot project. So I think maybe what we need to do is lobby the mayor to keep assigning me parks, because I would love to continue pushing this matter and it is a first step. It's not the end. We're doing the pilot project.